As I was saying, it wasn't until the mid-30s that I, for the first time, became aware of the 1928 election with Alfred Smith and the racist, or rather, religious overtones and the hatreds that were engendered.
I mean, in 28, you were this was not on your mind.
Who read? We didn't read the paper. Didn't read the headlines. We were only concerned with ourselves. About the only part of the paper that we read really were the comic strips. But to be aware of news, to be aware of anything that was going on in the world, we led such an isolated, insular kind of life. Now, this was at the University of Pittsburgh. Whether that was true on other college campuses, I don't know. I should imagine
so. In literature,
so.
It seems.
We were getting to the tail end of the flapper era, the F. Scott Fitzgerald, the speakeasy kind of thing, money was flowing, and no one was concerned about anything. And to think that this very important situation in American history, with all of the hate, was something that just completely passed over us. We were all aware of the Ku Klux Klan. This we all knew about. But I think we were relating it primarily to blacks and to Jews. Didn't realize the intensity of feeling between the Protestants and the Catholics.
And this Professor Blackburn began your political education?
My political education didn't start until I actually was practicing law. And I didn't register as a Democrat because another very major influence came into my life. When I started to practice law, there was a man who had been on my interview committee, Albert C. Troutman, and a man, a very handsome, a very distinguished, a very cultured person, who was from Butler's establishment. Troutman had become very interested in me, and very interested in my development, my growth. I was admitted to the bar in the fall of 32, and I was admitted after election. In 1933, we were having a judicial election in Butler. And Mr. Troutman advised me to register as a Republican. And this was the basis of it. Now, he himself was a Wilsonian Democrat. And his thinking was such that a Democrat to be elected, Butler was a very, very Republican county. And for a Democrat to be elected as judge, he had to have Republican votes.
Yes.
A Republican to be elected didn't make any difference whether about the Democratic vote. So that it would be politic for me.
So his advice was on a different basis from that.
His was on a very pragmatic kind of a basis. But interestingly enough, I became very, very Republican. I guess it's that I cannot endure just giving lip service. If it means something, it has to be whole thing, and I have to believe in it. And I became very, very involved in Republican politics and was espousing their political philosophy. And when Franklin Roosevelt was elected, and I just had no use for the man.
Oh, you were really
convinced that the man was 100% Republican. Because I started reading their literature, and became involved. I went out to speak to Republican rallies and that kind of thing. I was being used by the Republican Party for their interest, too. I mean, a young woman who was an attorney. I was a draw card.
But you respected this Republican establishment.
Oh, very much so. I mean, to go out and speak, I had to know what I was talking about, so I became steeped in the Republican literature. And in the 36 campaign, Milton still teases me about it, I was stomping the grounds for Landon.
How about Milton? What was his position?
He was very much a Democrat. He was a socialist. He voted for Eugene Debs for 50 million years. Milton had always been very liberal in his social philosophy. And Maine, Vermont, and Butler County went for Roosevelt, for Landon.
Maine, Vermont, and Butler County.
And I still maintain this this kind of thinking. And came the 1940 campaign, and Wendell Willkie was running, and I just worshipped that man because he was the liberal branch of the Republican Party. And I think he would have been elected if it hadn't been for the fact that you don't change war horses in the middle of a stream, this kind of thing. And Roosevelt was elected, and I'd come into Pittsburgh. Milton and I were married in 36, and I'd come into Pittsburgh and be totally surrounded by Democrats. Milton Harris and I were the only ones who were Republican, and I'd get together, and with all this screaming and yelling that would go along on the battle of this thing, because we were all very involved. We were all intense, because the 30s was a period of real foment, philosophically, social needs, foreign policy, our identity as Jews, and our fears and our concerns, and there was the Depression. And you never got together at that time. It was in the 30s that the evenings were spent in such exciting kinds of discussion. Nobody had money to go out and buy pleasure.
You weren't dancing at Webster Hall.
You weren't dancing at Webster Hall. You weren't nightclubbing. And even though Prohibition had been repealed, who had money to buy liquor? And also, it wasn't part of our scheme of things at that time. And you'd get together at people's homes, and and you would scream at each other.
Well, how about you and Milton at this time? What was, from 1932 on, you and Milton were pretty serious.
Oh, yeah.
And you had were at political odds, though. Did this enter into your relationship?
Oh, no, because, we always respected differences of opinion.
Didn't you fight?
We argued. There's a great deal of difference. There's a great deal of difference about it.
It must have been hard for you, with everybody else being a Democrat.
Oh, yes. But I'd go back. I'd be like Atlas touching the earth, you know, and being renewed in strength. I'd go back to Butler because I was a weekend wife. I was in Butler from Monday morning until Friday
evening. Well, this is the week of your life that I would love you to describe in detail.
Let me finish just this one mm-hmm. thing, and then we'll be finished with the political end of it. I never voted for Roosevelt until 1944, and then I voted for him, and I'm very happy that I did today, I mean, in retrospect. But I was at a Republican county meeting. We had a Republican rally at the courthouse, And the congressman from our district, we had that Butler County was in a congressional district with Beaver County and Lawrence County. And Lewis Graham, an attorney from Beaver County, was our congressional representative. Lewis Graham, who later became chairman of the Un-America, he was active in the Un-American Activities Committee. He was the one who also, his subcommittee was immigration, and he was the one who played such a tremendously important role in preventing changes of quotas for the admissions of refugees. But anyhow, Lou Graham was the speaker. This was Tom Dewey's first campaign, and he was running a Republican candidate. And the story was that Tom Dewey was really running the campaign in every precinct. And what was being said by the Republican spokesman was coming down from on high. Well, it was around that time that we began hearing about the kinds of street rallies that were being held in New York City that were very, very anti-Semitic in tone. This was the campaign when Franklin Roosevelt, who by that time was beginning to show signs of age and illness and the pressures of the presidency, when everything was being cleared through Sidney Hillman, who had been a labor man and very, very active in the Roosevelt administration at that time. And Lou Graham came and he was talking about this clear through Sidney. And he was talking about the communist threat. This is even though we were having, Russia was our ally. And these foreign influences. And Earl Browder, whose wife's name was some Russian name, I think her name was Anna Horowitz, could have been a Jewish name. And with Dubinsky and Sidney Hillman's name had been such and such. I mean, with this whole kind of thread going through it. Nothing of an anti-Semitic nature. But I was surrounded by all of the Christians who kept looking over at me. And after the thing was over, they came up and started apologizing. Here was World War II being fought at that time because one of the reasons being fought was because of the of Hitler's racial attitudes as well as his desire to control the world. Here were my co-religionists being exterminated in the concentration camps. And it became very, very frightening. 44, the war wasn't over. We had just begun, this was before the Battle of the Bulge. This was before we had gotten very far in the European theater and in the Pacific theater. That's right. We didn't know who really was going to win the war at that point. And I thought, my God, how could I vote for a man who is permitting and encouraging these kinds of things to be said by people like Louis Graham and on the street corners? I would be voting for my possible extermination. And that is why I voted for Franklin Roosevelt.
But this tone, this anti-Semitic tone, had never been apparent to you in any earlier Republican campaign.
No. I had never, interestingly enough, been exposed too much to anti-Semitism. I had never been called dirty Jew at any time in my life. I had not been excluded from anything because I was Jewish. But I think when we get to discussion of World War II and its impact, perhaps I will, I might bring it in at that time.
All right.
But let's
go back now to a week during your long engagement How long, when did you and Milton become engaged or decide
became engaged, and it was one of those things that you just sort of began taking for granted.
By the time you graduated from law school, was it taken for granted?
I think both of us sort of knew without saying. We never talked about marriage. In fact, we never talked too much about marriage until about 34, 35, and then it seemed to be far off in the distance, as I related in the previous taping.
Tell me about a week in 34 when you had begun your law practice in Butler.
I had my own office at that time. People practiced a lot.
Was that very different? Were people inclined to trust a woman attorney to come to you with?
I had no problem, really, and I think it started at the very beginning. I had been admitted to the bar, and I was immediately appointed master by the judge in an estate. And I recognized later why I was appointed. I was a totally unknown person. The attorney for the estate was also the heir of the estate.
Uh-huh.
And this estate, they couldn't get the estate settled. And there was a question as to whether there had been misappropriation of funds on the part of the executor, who was an heir and also the attorney for the estate. And it could have been a very hairy situation.
It turned out to be.
And to appoint someone as master with whom the who had been practicing law with this attorney for many years, because we didn't know quite what was. Coming out, whether it would have meant disbarment, whether it would have meant led to a criminal action or not. But I was a totally objective person. I was a total stranger. Well, apparently, I handled that well. Apparently, my questioning, my conducting of the hearings, my conclusions of law, the reports that I had written up were good enough that my name began.
This was a good beginning, good opportunity.
Right. And one of the parties to the suit, who was a husband of one of the heirs, later became a county commissioner. He became a client of mine immediately following this master's hearing. He was in the construction business and the real estate business. So
that speaks highly for you.
I got started that way. Of course, the legal business was very quiet at that time. It was depression. Very few real estate deals were going on. I did quite nicely considering the times. And my clientele was a mixture of Jews and Gentiles. It's interesting that most of my clientele were males.
Were what?
Were men. Women apparently must not trust each other.
Well, maybe women didn't use attorneys that much.
Well, that could possibly be. I mean, because at that time, I mean, the men handled most things. My practice was a civil practice. I handled corporations, small ones, I'd go to the office about 9 in the morning, and I'd be there until 4. And was involved in a variety of things. I was very readily accepted as a member of the bar by my colleagues. And there was no rejection in any which way, and they were always very, very kind in whatever kind of advices and services that they could render. Mr. Chapman was my patron saint.
This was very important.
He was, I just adored that man. He had tremendous influences on me, and he was extremely fond of me and very pleased and proud of me. I think one of the things, here was a man who was quite intellectual, read extensively. He and his wife traveled at a time when people in the 30s, I mean, the 20s and the 30s, only the very rich traveled, and he was very rich. They would go abroad for 3 or 4 months of the year, you know, with the traveling.
It must have been very flattering for you to be.
Oh, you have no idea.
The protege of such a
man. That's right. But he could talk with me about things that he couldn't talk with others. I read a great deal. He read a great deal. And he loved the theater. We loved the theater. He was interested in art. We had begun to be
interested. When you say we, didn't
you? No. Because, both of these men played had similar influences on me. In the cultural development. Now, I had it in my home. Because my mother and dad used to come in for the opera. There was always reading in our home and a lot of talking. But somehow or other, these two had really, it became more than a dilettante kind of cultural interest.
Yes.
It became a much more sophisticated approach through both of these.
How fortunate.
Because I never was on a train until 1936. Until I went out to Colorado to a convention. But here with Milton, who went to New York constantly. Here was Mr. Troutman, who went to New York 2 or 3 times a year and traveled abroad. All of these kinds of things were tremendously important. Mr. Troutman belonged to the Duquesne Club in Pittsburgh. It was this kind of thing. And then in the evening in Butler was when all of the organizations met in the evening. So in the evening there would be an ADASA meeting, there would be a council meeting.
Meaning what you belong, even while you were practicing law and single, you belonged to these organizations.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
When did you become a member?
As soon as I started practicing law, you became members of everything you had to. I became a member of the Business and Professional Women's Group. I became a member of Quota Club, which is business and professional group, but based pretty much on the same order as Rotary, one from a category. And since I was the only lawyer, female lawyer in Butler, I became that. And then I became a charter member of the American Association of University Women. Became president of the Quota Club in 34 or 35, and that was when I went out to Colorado.
This must have been a very quite an exclusive club. So one member from each?
From each day. There were there must have been about 28, 30 members at the most. And you had to be accepted unanimously. It was a black club.
And this was part of a national organization?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. International. And I went out to Colorado for that. Then I was a charter member of AAUW and became its president. And in fact, I was president of the Butler section of the National Council of Jewish Women and of AAUW at one and the same time. By this time, I was already married. And both organizations, national organizations, began pushing for civilian defense. This was in 39 or 40. And so I began pushing it locally. And Jack Campbell, who was a friend of Leon Fox, who both dairy farmers, Jack Campbell was appointed the civilian defense chairman of Butler County. And I was in charge of the volunteers for civil defense.
Did this mean recruiting them, training them?
Recruiting them, training. Now, this was when I was president of both AAUW and council at the same time, while I was still practicing law. This was the time then that they began putting in the rationing system. It was in 40 or 41.
Must have been 40.
One of those 2 years. And I had gotten a whole set of, with files I'd gotten in offices and all of that, and had set up a whole system and took care of the first rationing program. And I had occasion, Milton had to have, we had begun, this was before World War, before we became involved in the war, but we had already started the drafts. Serviceman started in 40 or 41, whenever that was. And Milton wanted to volunteer. And they had set up the procurement for the Air Force officers. And Milton went to Carlisle for an examination and found out that he had, for the first time, he found out that he had a high risk of it. It had been something that he had had all his life, which required surgery. We were having the sugar ration thing. And I had appointed someone to be in charge of it. And I wasn't there for the day, for the days of rationing, because I was in the hospital. Yeah. I came home. You notice I still refer to Butler as home.
We're going to get back to the
home. I came back to Butler. And I found that I had been replaced as chairman of the volunteers. Because by that time it had become the thing for the establishment women.
The first time that you had felt this discrimination.
That's right. And Jack Campbell had replaced me without speaking to me about it. And I talked with him, but I didn't make any issue about it. Maybe I was stupid for it. But I pulled back.
That's unusual for you, but maybe for you when you think of all you were doing at the same time.
No, well, I guess this rejection, I was hurt.
It was a true rejection.
Oh, yes, because I was Jewish.
This was the first time you had felt.
First time I had ever had. You see, and Jews were not part of the establishment. Jews were not committed to be members of the Public Country Club. Jews were not accepted into the women's club.
But that had not bothered you?
No, because I've never applied for any of these things or hadn't been. I didn't
the
need
civil
them,
defense
I didn't
was your baby.
I mean, and it was a community thing. I guess part of it was my pride would not permit me to show that I was hurt. I mean, because if you have to fight that hard for something,
it would have been very difficult to say this was an anti-Semitic thing that you did.
You see the story that was told me, well, look, you're practicing law, you really don't have the time, this requires full time. And there was some merit to that. But when I originally was setting it up, none of these women were interested.
And nobody objected to your being to this.
But by that time in Pittsburgh, it had become the thing. The same thing happened in Pittsburgh with gals who had been very involved in the Red Cross and civil defense at the beginning, because people who had been in council people and helped get it started, because this thing being pushed from national, you see. And then when your establishment, your Christian establishment came in, they took over.
That's very interesting.
So that was the only time. And It was the subtle kind of anti-Semitism.
That's a very subtle kind. Can we go back to, yes, to 34, before you were married, and you were talking about your practice from 8:30 or 9 to 4, mm-hmm, and you're being active in organizations in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
What were your social life?